Hello everyone, and welcome to Diving In with Josh. I am your host, Josh, and this is the wrestling podcast, not about wrestling, but about wrestling fans in this wonderful wrestling community. And we've had some really cool stories already here on Diving In. It's been a blast just to sit down and take these journeys along with everybody else. I've said this on, I think, every episode. I don't pre-screen any of these chats. It's not like I'm getting all the details beforehand. It is just a very brief rundown of kind of the topic that we have decided on. And, you know, just everything else like that. So I'm on the journey with everybody as we're kind of listening to this. And, of course, here on Diving In, we do have a guest every week. And this week, I have a very special guest sitting down with me, virtually, of course. But we have one queen. Queen, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm so good, Josh. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on Diving In. I'm so excited.
No, of course. I knew that I was going to have you on at some point. I have a list of people that I have, and you're pretty close to the top, so don't worry, Queen. You are on my list. It was just deciding a topic. It's what I do. For anyone that doesn't know, I approach these people approach me, or whatever. And one of the questions, I have a topic in my head that maybe we should do, or I ask, hey, what's something that you would like to talk about? And firstly, before we dive in on any of that topic we decided on, for anyone that doesn't know in the wrestling community, Queen, who are you? And tell us a little bit about your wonderful show.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know me, hi, I'm Queen, the Queen of NE on Twitter, and I am on Queen's Court. It's my show on Brainbuster Radio every single Wednesday. It's a super fun, collaborative, interactive show where I take topics, discussion points, maybe some matches in the future is my plan. And I bring on some really cool people to chat with me about whatever. And then I take some listener interactions and I answer some of their questions and talk about what they want to speak on that particular week. So I do that. And then I'm also on DYWTSB, which is an all WWE oriented podcast. We break down everything there with Pops and Mort. So that's a little bit about Queenie.
Yeah, that's the wrestling portion of this wrestling podcast that isn't about wrestling.
Right.
That is our little wrestling snippet. At this point, people know who Queen is. We've had a wonderful, what an incredible time we've had already in such a short time on Brainbuster. It's been absolutely wonderful. So shout out to everyone on Brainbuster and
absolutely
the very family-like atmosphere it is for us involved. it really is. We are like it's like a little second family for us all. We're all very involved in each other's lives, which is so bizarre considering we are all on weird parts of the world.
We are, but you're right. It's a total family feel. And it's amazing. You know, 5 weeks in now, here we are. Holy crap.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is really, really, really just like mind-blowing. And now this show isn't on Brainbuster Radio, but of course I talk about Brainbuster. They are my loves in the wrestling podcast weird community that we are in. But Queen, today we're not going to talk about wrestling. There's really not with you. What I kind of find intriguing about Queen is that you've got a little bit of mystery, and I like that. I do because I know you from the wrestling side of things. So today is a journey for me as along for everybody else. But Queen, could you just give us a little I'll let you take the reins, of course, but give us a little kind of snippet of what this topic is going to be about.
Sure. Well, I'm a theater person. I do theater as a hobby. It's not my profession, though I kind of wish it was, but that's okay. I do it on the side, and I've been doing theater since I was about 5 years old. So I wanted to discuss a little bit about the world of theater, musical theater, and what we call straight shows, straight plays, and my experiences with that, starting as a young child all the way through now as a 32-year-old woman, and how much has changed for me personally, and how much theater has touched my life and the life of others that I've worked with, and a couple little probably surprises that, you know, people won't really expect. So I'm excited to share this with you.
Yeah, this sounds cool because little you probably didn't know, I actually have a few theater stories myself, but we won't get into that just yet. But
I'm excited.
when you said the word theater or, you know, plays or whatever, whatever land you're in, whatever you call it, drama at school or whatever it is, that just my kind of inside my little light bulb inside my brain went ding. And I was like, oh, I could really have a nice conversation with you about this. But let's dive into some, where did a young queen, a little baby queen, where did this love start? Was this something that your parents were like, you're doing this? Or was this something that you were just, you can't really remember a time where you weren't kind of liking the theater world?
You know, what's so funny is my parents are not theater people at all, like at all. My parents are sports oriented people. Mm-hmm. My parents both played sports in high school. My dad actually had tryouts with a minor league is what I'm trying to say. A minor league baseball team that is a promotion under the major league that most people would know as in the New York area as the New York Yankees.
Even I know that.
You know that, yes. You may have heard that name.
I've heard that.
So one of their minor league teams he had a tryout with and was going to play, but he was unfortunately injured, so he didn't. But they're very sports-oriented people. They don't sing, nothing really musical. My mom took piano as a kid, but that was pretty much it. So the story I wanted to share about how this kind of started is when I was about 3, my mom likes to tell this story, and it's one of my first memories. I can kind of remember it. But I was at the grocery store with her, and we went in and did whatever shopping she wanted to do. We were outside waiting for my dad, I guess, to pick us up. And I got a donut, a chocolate donut. And one of my favorite things still to this day. And I was outside the donut shop area of the supermarket on the bench. And I was greeting everybody I met. Hi, my name's Queen. And this is my chocolate donut. Do you want to talk to me about my chocolate donut? And I just started performing right there. And my mom was like, to me, she told the story later, obviously, when I was older, and said, I knew right there something else was going on here. So she put me in music classes. And right away, I loved it. I started playing piano. I did chorus in elementary school. And that's when I started theater. I was always a talkative kid.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, as you could probably tell by knowing me, I like to talk.
Same here, as you know, yeah, with me, because I was very much the same as you. I don't mean this in a bad sense, but I was the same as you. I was a bit of a show-off. I like to show my stuff. I like to sing, dance, act, everything you could think. I just like to perform for my friends, for my family. Here's a little thing to make you probably relate to me a little bit more. When I was about 10, 11, 9, something like that, everyone can remember Hannah Montana, right? Everyone, at that age, I was just Hannah Montana. Hell yeah, let's watch a lot of Hannah Montana. So me and my younger sister decided to put on a Hannah Montana concert in our backyard for all of my family and friends to come and watch. But here's the thing that I think you'll like about me most, Queen, is that this show was not free. Those people had to pay to come watch me.
That's my boy. That's
I made them. Like, it was a Friday. I remember it. It was a Friday night, and you had to pay $3 admission, but you had to come. There was no, I forced you to pay that money into a little hat, and you come and watch me for an hour and a half. And we performed all of Hannah Montana's hits.
I am so proud of you right now.
So not only did I make them watch, I made them pay to watch me. So
That's
I
right.
could
A little
just,
entrepreneur.
yeah, I had that business sense before you can even think about business sense. But yeah, so I do understand what you mean by being that you just wanted. I liked as a kid, even now to this day, I don't. I like attention. I like
Yes.
and not in a bad way. Not like you know being like oh, all eyes on me, but just more so in a performance way.
Yeah, I can totally understand that.
But anyway, without me rudely interrupting, go on with your
Oh,
story.
that's okay. It's interesting. You know, at the time, I was an only child, and I was an only child until I was almost 11, and
Oh,
then my brother
wow.
was born. Yeah, so
That's a gap.
I, yeah, that's a big gap, huh?
Yeah, like me and
Yeah.
my older brother are in the, he's 7 years older than me, and he's the oldest, and that is a big gap. 7 years is a big
Sure.
gap. Me and my sister are 4 years apart, and that's still considered a
It's a healthy
decent,
gap,
yeah,
yeah.
that's, but then I have a younger brother who is 14 years younger than I am and
Oh,
21
yeah.
years younger than my older brother. So 11 years
Yes.
doesn't sound so
It doesn't
bad.
sound so bad, but you get what I'm gonna say probably next.
I definitely understand.
Yeah, so for me, a lot of my childhood was in my imagination. You know, I had friends, of course, and I had a ton of cousins. I'm part Italian,
Okay,
and you know, we just have a large family. My
no
other half
need to
is Scots
explain.
Irish. No need to explain. Both sides, Scots Irish and Sicilian. I mean, it doesn't get bigger than that.
Oh
So
man, are you the cast of Jersey Shore? Oh my God.
basically, no, actually, I'm not. No. But yeah, so I had a big family. But I didn't have anybody else at home, right? Other than my parents. And I got to really explore my imagination and create characters out of, like, you know, my Barbie dolls and stuff
Yeah.
like that when I was little. And that sort of fostered this whole world for me. It brought me into books. I love to read. I loved the escapism of it all. You know, I could be someone else in another world while I'm reading this book. Or while I'm watching this movie. And my grandparents were a huge supporter of my theater. My grandma used to have me watch Judy Garland films and Gene Kelly films, and my grandpa would have me watch John Wayne films.
Oh,
Because
very different.
yeah, very different. But, you know, the old school classics, right? And I saw that and the costumes and the fun makeup and the songs and the dancing, and I was hooked right away. And I was like, I gotta do this. And then it didn't really stop after that. I started in, you know, little school plays, which is kind of normal. Everyone's in those as an elementary school kid. But
Yeah.
once it got to about fifth grade, we had separate plays than just the ones that would be, you know, at a school assembly for your parents to come to. And that's when it really kicked off for me. And like I said, I was still an only child and I played sports. I played a sport every single season. I
Wow.
swam, I did soccer, I did softball, I did all of that, and basketball too. And I
Damn.
didn't really like some of it, to be
So
honest
you were
with
the sporty kid and the theater kid. That's usually not
you. Yeah.
something that the cliche is to be one or the other.
Right. And what was so funny about this whole thing is that was me my entire life. Like, I focused really on volleyball when I was in late middle school, so like 7th to 8th grade. Into all of my years in high school, I played year round. I was in the Junior Olympics for volleyball. I was also the yearbook editor. I was the
Wow.
student director for the theater company at my school. So I
Did you
did
sleep
sports and
when you
theater.
were at
I
school?
did
Just
sleep. I did. I did.
It
But
just sounds
was
like you
a
were just
busy
so
kid.
busy.
I was a busy kid, but I wanted to be busy. I had different parts of me, and I still feel this a little bit to this day. I have this like sports oriented side of me where I love sports. But then
It's
there's this other side that's like, nah, the theater and the music. You know, so it's kind of like this weird duality. I had my nerdy friends, right? My school theater, like math nerds. Back when I was in high school, it was very cliquey. It
Yeah.
was very much like you would see stereotypical on the like movies or TV.
It was
You know, there was the
basically High
jocks
School
and the nerds.
Musical. You had your cliques
Kinda, yeah, kinda like
and
that.
it
Yeah.
was all very, yeah.
It was all very separate. And I was in two camps. So I was in, you know, with what we would call the nerds and the smart kids and the theater people and the mechanical engineering type people, robotics club, that sort of vibe, were my friends my whole life. And then I had this other side of me with volleyball, and my cousin was the football captain, and like I had this whole other world. It was so weird.
That is
but so cool
weird.
At the same time.
Yeah, because you're in two different worlds almost. And it's so weird that you say, knowing you now, it's so weird that you love sport and theater, because it's basically wrestling when you think
right?
about it.
It's
the combination of two. So it kind of makes really, in a weird way, it makes really a lot of sense. You know, so it is weird. But so this was going into, when was the first time you kind of, well, at least when you can remember, that you were in like a theater show? Was it all through school? Was it more so a thing when you come out of school? What was the kind of vibe growing up?
Everything was in school.
Okay.
My summers were dominated pretty much by sports camps.
Yep.
Or like a summer camp in general. I went to them, not like a sleepaway one, just a day one.
Yep.
That was kind of in my town. All of the kids in the town went there. It was great. Super fun. I did that, but I also
something
fun in the summer, and we got to go on trips and go to the beach and go to the pool, you know, so it was fun and summer activities to keep us busy. And then I spent a lot of the time with my family. My grandma had a pool, so we would go over to her house, we'd play in the pool, you know, do all that stuff. So my summers were kind of busy for theater purposes. So most of my shows were throughout the school year. And the first time I can really remember it was in fifth grade. And it was this, I had to play somebody's fiance in like a haunted house we were buying or something. I can't remember the name of the show now, of course, I was like 10. But I can remember it vividly. My name was Veronica. And I had to buy this like very, you know the movie Clueless?
Yes.
Okay, so you know Cher's like plaid yellow outfit?
Yeah.
the iconic one. It's like her.
Oh, I know.
Terrible yellow plaid. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I had to wear it like that, but not in yellow. So that whole vibe with the hat and the stockings and the shoes and in plaid, but it was this like purpley color. It was very, very 90s. I could tell you that.
I was going to say, it sounds very 90s.
Yeah, it was. But it was the first time like my mom allowed me to wear lipstick in public. It was crazy. So I had to like
living it up.
I was living it up. I was living my best life. And like, you know, the kid who played my fiance, we were like friends since childhood. So that was kind of like weird, especially as a 10-year-old. But that was the first time I remember doing that. And I got so excited about performing it. Everybody in my family came to see it. It was ridiculous. Now looking back at it now, I'm like, you guys, this was fifth grade. This is not a big deal.
It's so weird because that was when I first did any kind of play or anything in theater. You're going to laugh at this because so I was cast, I guess you could say, at school as one of the main characters. We wrote an original play. Well, the school did, I guess. Because we were like, what, 10 or 11? And I was the villain. My name was Rodney the Rooster. I was a rooster. And I basically completely fucked everyone's day up. Like, I was just there to just be a pain in the ass. It was a scripted play, but we only performed it one night. And I forgot half of my lines and improvised most of it.
Oh, no.
I am. Poor Josh. So, all through high school, I was that kid. I was really good at drama. I was really good at music. Mm-hmm. Performing arts was where I kind of shined at school.
Sure.
So, I was, I'm a drama nerd. I wasn't like an A student at school. I was middle of the ground, C's and B's. Like I was, you know, a pretty average student, except when it comes to drama, I was just fantastic. I got one module wrong for a written component of the drama, which dropped me down from 100% correct to 99%. and I was top of the class still, but I got one component wrong, which didn't get me a perfect grade.
In
grade 11 or something in high school. But anyway, as soon as I went to high school and you could select subjects and stuff that you could, sure. Select your choices, drama and music was always my thing. So that was always at the top of my list of what I wanted to do at school. It was always something that I, as a kid, acting and performing was always what I wanted to aspire to do. Mm. I think as you just get older, some things you grow out of. And sure. I guess that was one of the things I grew out of. But yeah, all through school, I'm not so great at scripts. I'm better at improvisation. I'm very good at just thinking something up off the top of my brain. I'm very good at I guess that's what I've kind of taken approach when I do podcasting and this show in particular is I don't really have too much of a plan. It is like improvisation. Right. It is creating something out of nothing. It's just improvising to me is you're reacting to whatever it's very situation based. It's like you're reacting to whatever's going on, and it's just it is being very on top of your words and very ready to. You're very prepared, but also not prepared. If you know what I mean, I don't know if you've experienced that with your side of theater or not, but I was always very good at that. I was very good at comedy in theater and musical comedy and that side of theater. I was just. No, I don't want to sound like pompous and I'm tooting my own horn, but I was just really, really good at that side of performing. I do think even now I genuinely can make someone laugh, which is a good thing.
I'm sure. That
was me in kind of high school and my kind of, I guess, my experiences with theater and stuff like that, because, you know, it gets a little bit more serious when you move into the senior years of school, so it does get a little bit more, the pressure is on. But I did everything in theater. I wanted to learn every aspect of it because I was completely committed to taking this outside of school. So I learned every aspect of theater, from performing to sound to lights to set design to everything. So I was very well adept in the world of theater. But, going into your later years of school, was this something in your brain that you were like, I could probably do this outside of school as maybe a career? Or were you more on the sports side of things? Where were you heading when you were kind of leaning towards going out of school?
Theater for me was always going to be something that was going to be in my life. I knew that from probably my freshman year of high school. I was 14. I was in my first high school play. I had a minor role and I just felt it.
Yeah.
And I said, this is what I want to do. As my career, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I kind of knew what I wanted to do in my personal, professional life.
Yeah.
And theater for me, partially for two reasons, was not a career option. One, my parents wanted me to get a different type of education. They were very clear that if they were going to help me and assist me with school, that was not to be my major.
Okay.
And they didn't think and saw a lot of struggle, I think, with those who are in the artistic profession. And they didn't want me to do that. They didn't want me to have to struggle my way for something.
Yeah.
They wanted me to have a solid, in their view, career to fall back on. And they wanted me to have that option. But they were very supportive if I wanted to pursue it on the side, that would be what I would do. And that's no way, you know, am I trying to say anything negative about my parents, but it's a very narrow-minded view.
Yeah.
And now that I'm in my 30s, things are much different for me to think about now than it was when I was 14 and I had no choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and it's different. And I know where they were coming from and I understand. I know the struggle and what that means. And the sacrifices you have to make in order to make that happen. So yeah. I had to really think about it seriously when I was in my teenage years in high school. Okay, what am I going to do with my life? Where do I see myself every day, 9 to 5? And I'm like, do I see myself really making that commitment to the struggle of trying to get noticed and making a career out of it? For me, I love attention in my own world. In the world of the internet, in the world of television, in the world of film, that's not where I saw myself.
Yeah.
I don't want that type of attention. I never sought celebrity. I think for me, that would make doing what I do in theater not fun. Amongst my own community, amongst my own people, and even sometimes outside of it, when I travel to do theater, that's fine. Anything else for me, and I'm certainly not saying that I'm good enough to be on a national scale. That's not what I mean. I just meant that that would not be something that I would dedicate my life to trying to pursue.
And it's not something you visualize. If you can't sit down as a teenager or even as an adult and go, hey, what is my next step? What is my next move? If you can't, to me at least, I've always lived by, if you can't close your eyes and see yourself there, then you don't believe that you can get there. So to me, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say that I couldn't visualize myself doing it, because I can. It's more for me that I didn't want what else could possibly come with it.
The cons.
Should that ever happen. Yeah. The cons for me outweighed
the price,
what I really wanted out of theater.
I understand
Theater's
that.
Very personal for me. Theater is a personal experience.
It is. And when you talk about, you know, I can kind of see what you mean, because I was the kind of kid, even now, you know, because we're all still our child. You know, we all still have that inner child. We'll all still have what we were at 10, 15, maybe just not in the same form. But I'm the kind of person that I am quite loud, and I'm quite like, hey, look at me. But then when people actually look at me, I'm like, I have nothing important to really say. Do what you want. You know, like, I just wanted you to be like, hey, I'm over here, but I've got nothing. I've got nothing past that. It's like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to gain your attention. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted the attention, but I didn't want the actual, I just wanted the initial reaction of the attention. I didn't actually want the attention, if you understand what I mean.
I do understand what you mean. Yeah. And for me, like, I knew a lot of people living so close to New York as I do. I knew a lot of people who were older than me that had older siblings. I had seen what they were trying to do. It's a difficult business, and it's not something that I couldn't dedicate myself to. I'm a very dedicated person. It's just, I feel like there's a lot of things that come along with that. And like, one of my friends, for example, was in Hamilton when it opened.
Yep.
Nobody knows that, but they were. They were one of the performers, and I'm not going to say who they are.
Yeah.
But that kind of shit, to me, scares the life out of me.
Yeah.
I don't want my face anywhere, because I just don't want that type of recognition and attention. That's not for me. I want to do it in my own way. I'm a very much like carve my own path, do it my own way type of girl. And I always have been. So for me, like, she's off doing all this stuff that she's doing. I'm looking at her and I'm like, girl, you do you, boo boo. I'm so glad for you and things are great. And now, you know, she's off doing all sorts of other things now, and it's wonderful. I mean, she was nothing major, but it was enough, like, you know, when you're in something like that, your face is everywhere, you know? Yeah. And it's just not something I really wanted for myself. But I knew, though, that it's something I needed in my life. So I chose my career path. I knew firmly what I wanted to do with the rest of my life when I was 16 years old. And I made that commitment. And then I applied to the college I wanted to apply to. Meanwhile, I was doing 3 shows a year, playing volleyball year round.
Holy crap.
Doing high school in all the classes I was in, and like yearbook, student council, all this crazy stuff. I was a crazy kid. And then I went to college and I double majored and I minored, and my minor was in theater. That was my compromise to my dad. I said to my dad, I know you don't want me to do this, and you're financially helping me go to this amazing school that I went to, like, utterly amazing. I never thought I would have this opportunity, but luckily I got the financial aid. I got scholarships and my parents helped me. And then I took loans out for the rest.
Yeah.
But they gave me this opportunity that I knew I didn't want to waste. And so I said, okay, I know the deal, but I'm going to convince you to let me minor in theater. And by that time he had seen me in so many shows. Like, when I was a junior, we did Grease. And I was in one show, I was Marty with the little glasses. And then the other show, I was Rizzo. My dad had never heard me sing like on stage before in solos until that show.
Wow.
And he was in the audience, obviously. And afterwards, he saw me. And my mom and him were looking back and forth at each other. And the first thing they said were like, did you know that she could sing like that? And my dad goes, no, did you know that she could sing like that? They'd heard me sing around the house, of course, but not in that capacity.
Not in that
when
setting.
You're solo,
yeah.
By yourself, right? In front of 300, 400 people. That's crazy for them. Like, that's what they said to me. They couldn't believe it, you know? And he kind of had seen, and he came to every single show, my dad, every single one, even though he wasn't a theater person. And guess who's a theater person now? My dad.
That's just so, like, those
Isn't that
kind
cool?
of stories just like, are like, you made him a theater person. Like, it was you that did that.
It's my fault.
it's a similar situation with me because, so we had like these things in, I don't know how old I would have been, 15, 14, 15, 16, mm-hmm. probably more so 15 or 16, but we had these things with music class where we would work all semester to do this performance for the town that I lived in. So it would have been about 300, 400 people. And at 15, 16 years old, that may as well have been 100,000 people, like, you know, shitting your pants. And I had to perform a song with this school band. You Somebody by Kings of Leon.
Great
song. Great song. And I was the main vocalist for that song. And at 15 or 16, I had somewhat pipes. I could sing. I can still hold a note now, but I just don't. But I had to sing, and my grandpa and my cousin were in the audience, and it was the first, they had heard me sing around the house, but nothing like crazy. And
sure.
I'll never forget this day. My grandpa, who isn't really, my grandpa is not very affectionate. He doesn't really, doesn't really say I love you. Doesn't, you know, he's that kind of just straight shooter man that just, you know, there's not a lot of affection, I guess. He loved me dearly, and he still does, but he just didn't really show it.
Yeah, it's a different
the
generation.
First ever time in my life that I can actually recall, my grandpa, when he, you know, I walked out and he was picking me up from outside of the place, he gave me a hug that day. So
Aww.
I was like, oh, bless. I was like, I did something right. But yeah, I can see what you mean. Performing in that kind of sense, especially, I think this is just pretty much across the board, but especially singing, it's so nerve-wracking. Oh my God.
It is.
God.
It's hard.
It is
not an easy thing.
No, it's not. And it's so, compared to any other instrument that, you know, guitar, drums or whatever, singing is so subjective. It's like
it
wrestling.
Is.
It is like wrestling in the terms of...
No, it is.
People are the... You know, there's no really right way of singing. Because
Mm-mm.
there's so many different voices, and you're like, oh, that's good. That's more my... But, you know, with a drum kit, with a guitar, like, yes, you can play it well, but it's still going to sound like a guitar.
Sure.
So, I see what you mean. Singing is frightening, and especially when you can do it in front
it
of
is.
Your family, it's, like, even more nerve-wracking because you want to... Hey, I know about you, but I always like to impress people. I was always like, yeah,
me too.
Give me that pat on the back after I've kind of done that because, especially with family. So I do see what you mean, but so you minored in theater.
I did.
At that point, even when you were going, okay, it's not really the career for me, you always knew it was going to be on your life. But when you minored in theater, was there ever a part of you that goes, maybe I should do this? Or
yes.
Was it just the attention, the cons still in your brain, even thinking maybe I can do this, where the cons just going, I don't want to be that person?
Yeah. So college changed the game for me. I, like I told you, I double majored, so I did all of my other academic stuff.
Yep.
But I also did work study to help me pay for school. So I worked in the art and theater departments all 4 years of college, in addition to everything else that I had to do. And it was a wonderful experience. So I worked with some of my theater professors. It was a small school, so I saw them every day. The amount of craft and study and appreciation that I got for theater. I can't even describe it to you accurately in words. My world was rocked when I got to college. I had some of the best theater professors and guest directors and guest producers come and work with me for these 4 years. And not just me, but everybody in the program at the time. And there was a point where there was things that I was doing performance-wise a few times where I thought, damn, like I really should do this.
You have something. You sensed it within yourself.
I did. And I didn't realize it until afterwards, you know? So I had done so many different shows. And the shows that I actually did in college were not musicals.
Oh.
Everything in college was either Shakespeare or a straight play of some kind. And some were classics and some were modern.
Wow.
And there's several different things that I could share with you about different experiences. But to answer your question, there's a thing in America called the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts.
Yep.
And they have what we call the KCACTF, which is the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival. And there are different regions throughout the country. And I'm being in the Northeast. We're in Region 1. And what they do is they come around to different colleges within their region and they watch you. They watch the shows. They grade you in a way. It's kind of like a food critic, you know?
Yeah.
When they come in and they analyze everything. Yeah, it's like that, but for theater.
Yeah.
And they come in and they analyze everything from the sound to the lights to the stage management to the direction to the production to the actors themselves. And I was in my junior year. And this happened to me twice. So in my junior year, I did two shows that were totally student directed. One show was a like kind of 1950s vibe.
Yep.
And it's by Steve Martin. And he made this show about this 50s housewife who I played. I was the lead. And she was kind of stuck in that role and didn't know her own identity. And that was one play. And then the second play I was in was about body image.
Oh.
And four different women in different body types. So we had a very skinny girl. We had a very short, petite girl. We had a what people would say would be like the ideal body type.
Yep.
And then we had me, who's of the bigger variety. And this show was all about the shame that women feel from childhood to adulthood about their body image and the way that they look and their self-esteem. And from these two performances, which were totally student-directed, produced everything, not a single professional in the building, right? From this show, I was nominated for what they call an Irene Ryan Award for the Kennedy Center, which meant that I could compete on a national level in theater.
Holy crap.
So I went into the ACTF that following year. But before I went, senior year had started, and I was in probably the best role of my entire life. I got to play Lady Macbeth.
Oh, that's, you can't really get...
It doesn't get much better than
it's
that.
It's a very, I use this word a lot, but it is a very iconic role.
It is. For women, it's the way to go. And I was 21 at the time. And I was like, are you sure? Like, you're sure? To the director. And she's like, I'm sure. And I was like, okay.
Just on that, mm-hmm. you know, obviously there's a lot of nerves and a lot of pressure playing something like Lady Macbeth because...
Very much so.
Obviously, as I stated in high school, obviously theater and drama was something that I was very much passionate and involved and in love with. So, of course, I know... that I know that if I was of the female side of things, that would be the one. Again, I said I was more of the comedy route, but I said if I was to play a serious role like that for a woman, there's nothing really more serious and nothing you can really be more taken serious in than if you absolutely crush Lady Macbeth. There really isn't. Yeah. it is very much, I'm just trying to kind of let you know that I know how, even non-theatre people that don't really know, they know the importance of Lady Macbeth. There really isn't a bigger role that a woman can play if you want to be taken seriously.
No, for sure. And you know, I wasn't very good at comedy. I'm good at dark comedy.
Yeah.
That was my thing in theater. But like comedy, like you and improv, that's not my thing. So
it's hard.
It's hard. It's not.
People don't realize, like when I used to say to people in high school, like I would love to be performing in an improv theater, in, you know, and, you know, go to improv shows where people come and watch improv, because I thought that's so cool. And people are like, oh, that's nothing. That's so easy. And when people try to do it, I've had times, many times, that you just blank and you're like,
sure,
I don't know what to say, because it's like having a conversation and you have lulls in your conversations all the time. In improv, mm-hmm. that's a big no-no. You can't just,
no, you can't.
Silence is the death of you in improv. So,
yep.
Not to, take off your story, but
no, it's okay. I just totally get what you're saying.
People just they don't realize the comedy. Here's a side question for you. When we look at, you know, you're obviously into theater and you're obviously into, you obviously are a fan of movies and the Oscars and the gold, all of that. Do you think comedy is taken seriously enough?
No.
Do you think
not on the same scale as drama?
Mm-mm. Do you think it should be to the point where comedy actors and actresses, although I hate that word, we're just all the same. But
I know.
Do you think they should be taken for best actor, for best picture? Do you think they should be considered in those roles, or are they just not serious enough?
I don't know. I think good acting is good acting, whether it's comedy or dramatic. There's a lot to be said for somebody who can create that story, especially through improv, successfully, that don't get recognized enough. Like Robin Williams, right? He was such a genius in terms of improv comedy. If you've ever seen any of his stand-up, you'd know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But he only really got recognized for his more serious roles. And that's a comment really more on the whole industry as a whole, which is a totally different topic. Maybe we should dive into that another time.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know what I mean? There's a lot there to unpack. But yeah, I mean, in some instances I do. I think it depends on the comedy for me. Like a Dumb and Dumber type movie, I don't really know that that's an award-winning film, but it's definitely a classic. So I guess it's going to be down to how they're going to redefine quality work, quality production from an actor. What they give you and what they make you feel should be based on that particular emotion, not necessarily all seriousness. But we as a nation do that. We like the more serious acting. And we feel like, oh my God, like when Lady Gaga did the movie with Bradley Cooper just recently, like, oh, she's an Oscar shoo-in because of her dramatic performance. Okay, well, what about some of the funny things that happened too? Yep. Doesn't that deserve the same sort of recognition in the same light? I mean, I guess it all depends. But for me, good work is good work.
Yeah, I agree completely. And here's another tidbit about me. When I was about 21, so a few years ago, because I'm a baby. Mm-hmm.
You are a baby.
I got very, very close. If you could see me right now, I'm pinching my fingers together because I got very close to attempting stand-up comedy. And
ooh.
I was very much into the idea, and the night I was doing it, I was going to do it, I got incredibly sick. And that to me was a sign that I should never do it. So I've never attempted to do it because stand-up comedy is incredibly nerve-wracking. I was a ball of nerves. I got food poisoning that night. It wasn't great. It was about an hour before I was meant to go on, and I was like, I'm sick, and it was not fun. But again, another thing that's not really taken seriously is stuff like any comedy role isn't really taken seriously. But anyway, we digress. You were going into Lady Macbeth. going into playing that role,
yeah,
obviously we talked about the pressure and the nerves that must going in it. How did you think you did? What was the reception of it anyway?
So this was, for me, the second moment that I felt like, okay, maybe there's something happening here. The first was when I got nominated. And now when I stepped into Lady M, you know, for anybody who doesn't believe the myth or the story behind Macbeth, and I could say it now because we're not in a theater, but if we were, I wouldn't say it out loud. I call it the Scottish play. And for anybody who doesn't believe in that curse, let me tell you, as someone who lived it and who performed in it, that thing is real. It is real. It was a dark cloud. I have never experienced anything like that in my entire theater life. Weird things happened. Relationships between people changed, like in real life. It was bizarre, but that's another thing.
Yeah.
When I was stepping in to play it, I knew I had to take it seriously. So I did a lot of Shakespeare study. And luckily, one of the people they brought in to work with us is a Shakespeare expert. So to help us understand how to speak in iambic pentameter and how to accurately convey the emotion behind what the words are actually saying. This is not a language we really speak anymore. This version of English is not what we talk in every day.
It's a whole nother language.
It's a whole nother thing. And having to understand that from an actor's point of view, you have to really know what you're saying. Because as actors, we have to know the intention behind every single syllable. You know, this is what I always tell people. You can say okay in a few different ways. I could say to you, okay. Or I could say to you, okay. Or, okay. The way that you say something and your intention behind that changes the whole meaning of the word okay.
Yeah.
If I shorten the word, if I put a before it, it gives you an indication of the emotion that I'm feeling. And that's what we have to do as actors. So to break down Shakespearean's beautiful lines and this language, it's a task in and of itself. So we spent a lot of time with a script,
It's the opposite, because you cannot improv that at all. It has to be by the book.
Spot on.
It has to be. And the experts of Shakespeare and theater know when you've made a mistake. The slightest little tone change. And it's like, uh-oh.
Yep. And they will correct you and they will help you and work with you. So thankfully we had that. But for me, this was a dream role. This was the role that I really wanted to play. So when I got it, I dove in head first. And I mean, we committed to it. The guy who played Macbeth and I, we went on like dates together. We were both single at the time, so it wasn't like faux pas. But we went on like dates together like a married couple would do. Like we totally went method. And we tried to explore the relationship between each other, because the relationship between him and her in the show is so deep. This is a woman who can convince him to commit murder.
Wow.
By not even like doing very much. So like his mental state, her mental state, their ambition, you have to have that connection in order for it to be believable. So we like did that kind of stuff, and we went out and we talked in our script. Like we would have like conversations doing like act one, scene five, right? Yeah. Or doing whatever we're going to do. And that was something I knew that I really needed to get done and get done right. And we did a modern version. We did not do a version that would be set in, you know, like Tudor England style clothing. We did a modern version where Macbeth was trying to take over CEO of the company by killing the king. The king was really the CEO. And we were all in modern clothes. And, you know, it was crazy. The moment I knew that I felt like I'd done something right was when the lights came down after our final dress rehearsal and my two best friends were in the back sobbing because I just committed suicide in the show. Spoiler alert, if you haven't read Shakespeare by now, it was in the 1500s.
That's like Endgame. Uh-oh.
Endgame. And I saw their face, and they said to me later, I didn't even recognize you. I had no idea what happened. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, we had no idea. And then when I opened, not the opening night, but the second or third performance, another person from the ACTF came in. And they watched the show. They call it adjudicating. and they pulled us in afterwards to give us their notes. And he said out loud, "Are you going to this Kennedy Center yet?" I said, "Yeah, I'm actually nominated. I'm going." It was in like 2 months.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Oh, you're going already? Because I was nominating you right now," before I even said a word of my notes. And wow. I looked at him and I was like, "Are you serious?" And like, and I don't mean this to sound cocky. I'm not telling a story for that. But it was the moment where somebody who did not know me, out of nowhere, and he just had to put his book down and tell me that before he even said anything about the show. That's when I knew. I was like, okay, maybe I really am okay at this. Like, yeah. Maybe I'm okay, you know? And it was that moment where I was like, dude, I better never stop. Like, never stop. And I haven't. 12 years later, I have not stopped.
That's a good thing. Because even if you... I don't think people realize, like, I think you hear so many stories of, like, oh, I attempted this and it turns out it wasn't for me. Like, I had some talent in it, but whatever it is, and people just stop doing it. There is still a life outside of a career. Things can still be a hobby. I think it's just important to kind of, you know, touch on that the fact that, okay, you had other aspirations and you didn't want this lifestyle. However, you still enjoyed very much the theater aspect and performing.
Absolutely.
The performance side of things. So when did you kind of go, okay, this might not be my career? And from that, when did you go, I definitely want this as a hobby?
Yeah. Once I competed and I got through to the finals at that competition.
Yeah.
And that for the competition, just for context, you have to prepare two scenes, one classical, one modern, and one monologue. So I had to pick scene partners to come with me to compete. So I did one modern performance, which got me into the semifinals. And then I did a classic to get me to the finals.
Hell.
Which was crazy. So we did a scene from Rabbit Hole, which is a heartbreaking play about a couple that son gets run over by a car. And it's so emotional. So we did a scene from that. And then we did a scene from Much Ado About Nothing, which was one of my favorite Shakespeare shows. And then my monologue was from a play called Dogface. And it's about a girl who had been attacked by a dog, as you can imagine. And
I was going to say, I think I can sense sense the tone. Also, side note, monologues are scary.
Monologues are very scary. I was just going to talk about that. It's so funny. You read my mind.
It's like, in a sense, it's like stand-up comedy or improv comedy. It's all on you, and it's literally the spotlight is on you, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yep, it's all on you. There's literally nothing else but you and a spotlight and your entire body to get this across. And after I competed and I came home and I got to digest, and I was the first one in my university to ever make it that far, ever. And I was talking to my theater professor afterwards, and she's like, "So what are you going to do now?" And I looked at her and I said, without hesitating, "I'm going to keep doing shows in my community theater when I go home." And she said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "I'm sure." I knew right then. I had the best experience in college. I learned an enormous amount. I was in 15, 16 plays. I got to help my friends do their senior theater thesis. I got to perform my own section of a theater thesis, even though I wasn't a major. I got to do a whole bunch of things, the acting and the quality of work I got to experience, not just in a acting capacity. I did backstage stuff as well, costumes and helping the stage managers. I give them a lot of credit. It's not for me. I couldn't do it. I'd rather be on than off. they have a lot of hard work, but yeah, after I did that whole thing, and the monologue terrified me to death, but we made it through.
Yeah.
But those are always the scariest part for me. But I knew right away that this was going to be a part of my life.
Yeah.
Part of my life, I guess, if that makes any sense.
No, it really does. It's just more so a section, a fragment of your life. I guess as we're kind of, you know, you kind of touched on the fact that you still do community theater and you still very much enjoy it, even to this day, which I think is really important because, it's always good to touch on your childlike side, because everyone still has it. But I guess theater is that for you, because you've been doing it since you were a kid. So it is that kind of constant, I guess, in your life that it's always been there. I guess what I can kind of ask you to kind of wrap up your time with theater and your story is, do you feel like in your brain, I'm sure there's still moments, even when you're doing community theater, where you go, man, I really probably could have done something more with this. I guess what I have to ask you is, do you feel fulfilled in your theater life?
I do. I have the very distinct privilege to have some of the coolest adult theater programs around me, with very talented actors, very talented stage crew and directors and production managers and all of that stuff. I get to go to theater. I live close to New York. I get to go and see professional theater all the time, anytime I want, which is wonderful. But for me as a performer, there's nothing quite like getting handed a script after you've auditioned and got a part.
Yeah.
And cracking it open for the first time and smelling that new page smell, and you start working and collaborating. That's what I love most about theater. If you have a good group of people around you, the things that you can create, the human experience you get to share, the escapism you get to share is very, very special. I feel so happy with where I am in theater. I do it for fun.
Yeah.
I don't do it as my job.
Yeah.
That's the real thing that I want to take away from that. I didn't do it for a lot of other reasons, but the main reason is I don't want to rely on that for my living.
Yeah.
I want to put what I do to earn my money to the left, and then I want to go and do theater at my leisure, at my pleasure, and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
The entire experience. I'm never at home more than when I'm on stage and there's a spotlight in my face.
Yeah.
It feels like home to me. I'm ready to go. Like, I'll just start singing right now, you know?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
ready. But it's not something I want to do for money. That would ruin it for me. Making it a business would ruin it for me.
It is good that you are in that aspect of you're not sucking the fun out of it. Because I think a lot of people... You look at any profession and there's people within it that loved it and now they're so bitter towards it because they've sucked the fun out of it. They've made it their job. And that's not saying to not do something you love as your job, but
no, I do something I love as my job, but exactly that. It doesn't have to... There are lots of things in life that I feel like people put a lot of pressure on themselves to do. And it, after a while, you forget why you do it. And I never wanted that to happen to me. So I knew, you know what, Queen, let's do this way. And I've never looked back.
It's good. It is good because for the most part, I'm a person that lives my life with pretty much no regrets. I'm pretty much a person that everything happens for a reason, good or bad. So I'm glad that you're in that mindset. Final couple of questions, final things just to wrap it up. But first one is, do you think that the theater world has enough mainstream attention worldwide?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Now so more than ever.
Okay.
Theater has come such a long way. When I was in high school, it was just starting to be cool. High School Musical had just premiered on Disney Channel.
I was a kid when that came out. I was like 11, probably. But my God, High School Musical 1, 2, and 3 were my life.
Yeah, I wanted to be Mrs. Darbus. I was like, when I got older, can I just be around all these theater kids? It's like the best, you know?
It's the best thing I've ever heard.
Yes. She's fabulous. You know what I mean?
I was a Sharpay and Ryan guy. I liked Ryan.
Of course
Ryan
you were.
That I think everyone just kind of gets that from me when they say High School Musical, and I'm like, who's my friend? They're like Sharpay and Ryan. They were just fun. They were kind of mean, especially Sharpay. Yeah. She was a bitch, but I liked her.
She had a lot of pizzazz.
I watch it now, and me and my sister will watch it, and I'm like, man, Sharpay's a bit of a piece of trash.
I know. But, you know, it's so fun. And I feel like it was getting to a point when I was in high school and then in college when it had come out, really, for me, High School Musical, and seeing the change, right? Because the other thing I didn't mention is I also have directed and produced a whole bunch of plays for kids. So I've done and worked with a lot of high schools to produce their drama programs.
Wow, that must
it was
be,
really cool.
Yeah, that yeah, must it was be really seeing cool. someone else do what you love.
Yeah.
And essentially creating something from nothing is the best thing you can do, in my opinion, in life, is just have something from nothing and watch it grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, theater is such a safe space in a lot of different ways for creativity, for friendship and collaboration. And to give that back to somebody when it changed my life, that for me was so rewarding. And when I was given that opportunity, presented it, I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm so in. I would totally do this. And I did it for about 7 years.
Damn.
And then my schedule changed and things happened in life. You know, I got married, shit happened. So I haven't produced that for kids lately, but it's something that I did do. And it was so much fun and so rewarding from the opposite side. It's a gift that someone gave me and I wanted to give it back. And to answer your question, theater is so different now than it was when I was younger. It's so much more mainstream. It's so much more accepted to be a theater person.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with how and what plays have been presented in Broadway. Hamilton changed the whole game. The whole game.
Yeah.
In the last 4 years from when it, you know, was starting, you know, in the public theater in New York to where it is now. I mean, things have like been so different. It's so great to see theater getting recognition, you know, worldwide. You know, one of my best friends is a theater professor and she teaches stage management and tech. And it's so cool. She was on the original performance of Once. I don't know if you know that musical, but it's the one that set the Irish
Bar. Yeah, I've heard of it. I don't believe I've ever seen it, but I have heard of it.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. So, you know, she was in Broadway and working with them. She's done stuff with Wicked and
Wicked is fantastic.
Oh, so good. Right? You know, and it's seeing it from her perspective, because she works in the business, even as a professor. She does things on the side that are actual, you know, theater things.
Yeah.
And, you know, even from her perspective, she's like, you know, it's such a different world than 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. So I think it does. I think it gets a lot more respect than it used to.
I think that's a word No. I think when I think of it in a worldwide mainstream aspect, I think of theater, Broadway, especially, as respected. I think that's a word that I think of. Maybe not the most popular thing for people to be like, I'm going to see this. Although it's changing, I think the one thing everyone says is like, there's a certain level of talent that you have to be a part of those shows. So absolutely. I think respect would be the first word that I kind of think about when I think of, you know, theater in this day and age, at least.
Sure.
The other thing I want to ask you, is that like I said, I don't really live with any kind of regret, but there's certainly things I wish I did within the world of you know, that side of things. Like I wish I was still attempted to do it now. I do miss, I'm a performance person and I miss aspect of performing. I think that's why I like doing this kind of stuff so much is, you know, and you've noticed with me, I'm very much open book and I'm very much, I'm on live on Twitter. I'm on Instagram stories. I've got, you know, I'm out there and I'm always just putting something out, seeing what sticks. I'm very much trial and error person, always have been. But I think that's just my side of things with, again, improv and that comedy side of things in the theater world is very much what I miss. think, and it's not really easily accessible where I live. It's not a thing that's just, you know,
around the corner.
Yeah. It's something I'd have to travel to. It's something I'd have to organize. It's just, listen, it's just honestly, it's just for a hobby. It's a little bit too out of my reach.
But I understand.
I do miss that performance. So again, I think what I need to kind of ask you is that being, listen, I don't believe in this at all, but there still is a stigma against women and men within even the theater industry. And I guess, you know, when you're coming through, you know, going in that competition and doing this, did you feel like you had a fair chance being a woman? Because, I mean, some people, even in this day and age, which I hate even bringing up, but some people still devalue women in that, quote-unquote, entertainment industry. So, sure. I mean, performance-wise, did you ever have a moment where you felt
marginalized?
Because of your gender. Did you ever have that in that theater world, or were you not involved enough in it, at least from a higher perspective, to feel that?
The only ever time that I felt that way was when I went with one of my friends to be an extra in an HBO TV show.
Oh.
The only time I felt like that is when they were doing a scene and they wanted the men to be in the front and the women to be in the back. And not because they had to be, but because they wanted the boys to be in the front, because we're just women, so we can just stand in the background. That was the only time I ever heard anything like that in my entire professional acting career. And I'll say professional because, you know, I've done things that aren't just community theater. I wouldn't call it off Broadway. It's not like that, but it's professional enough where, like, you know, it's a bigger deal.
You looked at it in a respected way. It's not just, you know, Granny's carport.
It's not just a local place. Yeah. Right. It's like an establishment and they charge a hefty amount for tickets and things like that. So that was the only time. Theater, for me, in my experience, going from a regular college student theater to the more professional theaters that I've worked in and been a part of and performed with, they celebrate women more than anybody else I've ever experienced, even in my personal profession, like my real life.
Yeah.
Like my actual job.
That's a good thing. Because it's not something
theater's different.
I don't know. I hate this conversation, to be honest, because...
Okay. I understand.
No. I just... not in a demeaning way. I mean it is in like a... I hate the fact that we still have to talk about this. I just wish it wasn't a thing that was even crossing my mind. But from my point of view, as it's sometimes in this world, because people go to one extreme to the other, either people are extreme feminists where it's just they don't want anything else, and then there's people on the other thing that just don't want any, like, they don't value women and race and gender or whatever. But being completely in the middle as a straight white male, sometimes you are automatically put in the extreme box of you don't value women's rights. And
isn't true.
Which isn't true at all, but do you see my kind of point I'm saying?
I do.
Because I say one wrong thing and, I mean, the world's out to get me. It's like, oh no. It is a very, I guess it's just the world we live in. However, we've progressed a lot. And I think in the entertainment world, especially in that side of things, in, I guess, Hollywood.
There's a big disparity out there, though. I mean, there's a big disparity in pay. That's been coming out, you know, for film and theater. You know, it's different. But in my experience, you know, my professors and my community theaters that I've acted with, the adult theaters and the other theater companies, I've had directors that wanted to gender bend. So like typical roles that would be a male role, they switch it. I've had, you know, all these opportunities to be in female led productions. My director was a female. My producer was a female.
Ah.
You know, it's different. And even the men that were brought in, we're very much like equal opportunity. Whoever best fits this role is who's going to get this role.
Thank you.
And that's what
I
they taught
like
us.
That. See, that's equality to me. That is not, it's not about like men being better or women being better. It's literally the word. It's equal. Equal. Mm-hmm. So whoever's best for the part in the theater world gets the part. And that's what I love hearing those kind of stories, because that to me is true equality.
I agree. I agree 100%. And there is a lot of inequality in the entertainment business.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for race and gender.
Yeah.
For me personally, it was just in the TV world. We were paid less and we were put in the background. And I was like, nope, I'm done. That's it.
At least I'm all set for that. At least you, because there's a lot of men and women that would just be like, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
and not do anything.
I don't like that. That's not my style.
No, it's not me either. I don't like that. It is weird for me because I will never, well, I can't say that I'll never experience that, but it's less likely that I will experience that kind of treatment, I guess. I guess
sure.
is the word.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to even put that into words. But
it's just bizarre. To me, it was just like, really, dude? Okay. Well, I still stood out here for 12 hours the same as this guy next to me. Really? Okay.
Same as anyone.
It just
you
was
know.
Idiocy to me. That's just ridiculous.
I agree. That's just what a stupid. It's just,
it's
lack of a better
stupid.
Term, it's stupid. But
it is. it is.
The only thing that I have left to ask is, do you think in our lifetime that we will ever have true equality in the world?
Oh, God. In our lifetime? Lord, honey, we've been humans on this planet Earth for a very long time. And we've gone through phases, you know, of equality and culture and what's accepted and what's not accepted and what happens throughout history when religion is added to the mix and how that changes everything and people's perspective and views and what they believe in and their values. It's a very weird time that we live in now. I don't know that by the time I die, which I'm never going to because I'm a vampire, but
when Queen alludes to her job, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, you caught me. No, I just don't ever want to die. But that's a different subject. I don't know. To be honest, I want to be hopeful. Really, I do. But the experiences that I've seen throughout history, I don't know. And I've read about throughout history. And if you look at the historical timeline, true equality, true real equality in the whole world, I don't know if that's possible.
Me either.
Because people are going to always be contrary.
Yeah.
There's always going to be someone or a group of someones that do not agree that that is the way things should be. So until that ideology changes, I'm not sure that it's possible. Can it be more equal? 1,000,000%. I believe that 100% will happen. Yes.
The world
we
has
will
progressed.
More.
The
it
world
has progressed.
Has progressed. And I will say,
it needs to progress more.
I personally think, even though there still is, like you said, there still is doubters and people and whatever and deterrers, but I think in, you know, talking right now in this year, I do think we're in a better spot than we were in 20 years ago. And the fact that we're talking about things like equal pay and equal rights means that eventually there has to be a change.
And I think you're right. I just think there's also in the same coin, if you flip that coin over, there's still so much disparity and inequality.
I mean, yeah.
You know? And it's so hard to say that because, you know, people don't like to admit that they're wrong, especially those that are in authoritative positions. They don't want to admit that things are happening that are going against what they want to happen. You know?
Being from a different country, you've never experienced this, but we actually had the opportunity, which I thought was just incredible. In 2010, we had our first female Australian Prime Minister.
That's right.
And I have never experienced in my lifetime a more form of inequality.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why. It's just because the comments that woman received and everything was She's doing this because she's a woman. This is why we've never had a woman in charge.
That's right.
This is why you've obviously probably heard that we've had a female prime minister in Julia Gillard. And she lasted 2 years in office before she was eventually removed. And yeah. We haven't had a female candidate. Side note, all Australians listening, not this sad day, but the next one, you must go out and vote. It is compulsory in this country, so if you don't vote, you get a fine. So please make sure.
Oh, I would love to do that in America.
Me and Wilf talked about that as well. I don't know if you knew that about Australia, but it is compulsory to vote.
Yeah,
once you're
18.
I think it's a very, very good idea. And
it would be nice.
That's all I'll kind of say. But yeah, we did have that. And I've just relating to equality, I've never experienced having a female prime minister and having so much inequality in our country.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Because having a woman in charge, all it did was bring out all of those terrible people that live even in this country, and saying that it shouldn't be happening. There's always going to be bad people within a bunch, but I don't know how much worldwide news that made. It is weird to talk about that with someone not from here, because everyone just kind of knows. And I was that was 9 years ago now. I was a baby, basically. I was 15 years old.
You were.
And I'm not really sure at 15 what politics are. I know more about it now. I still don't understand politics. I don't think I ever will. But
I don't think politicians understand it either. So
no.
Yeah, right.
But trust me, it's bad everywhere. It's not just, don't worry. But yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is just equality. When I ask about true equality, and the reason I asked is because I'm the same as you. There's always going to be people, there's always going to be religion, there's always going to be something involved in it that just goes, no. And that's men and women. I ever understand a woman who isn't for women's rights. I've just never understood that. But there is even, like, it's not just a men versus women thing. There's women.
There's women versus women. Mm-hmm.
And there's men versus men, and there's...
Men versus men, absolutely.
It's not, to me... again, I don't see gender in people. I see a person. My best friend from school, we're still best friends to this day, is a female, and it's just completely friendship. We've never had any intention of anything else. It is just, and people always were like at school, you're best friends with a girl, and to her, you're best friends with a boy. It's like, yeah, what's the problem here? You know what I mean? That's what I think.
People have problems with that.
And I don't know about you, but I don't see a problem with that. They're just people. People are human beings, and
To me, it's real simple. To me, people are people. You're going to do whatever you want to do, and God bless you.
Yep.
If you don't believe in God, then just bless you and enjoy your life. I do not care what it is you do as long as you do not hurt other people. I'm cool. It really doesn't bother me
100%
at all.
Agree.
And everybody is so bothered.
I know. The world we live in, everyone's just so worried about what everyone else is doing.
I know. Get your nose out of
in the world,
business. It's not your business.
In the world we live in, we make... Well, at least in my... You're a little bit older than I am, Queen, but at least in my world, everyone is documenting everything they do, including me.
Yeah.
I document everything.
Including me. I had to pull back from that.
Snapchat. I'm like literally taking, like, I could be going to have a shower, and I'm like, I'm about to have a shower. It's like, but we're so weird, the culture we live in. It's like, oh my God, if I don't tell this person I'm having a shower or I'm going to the bathroom.
Did it even really happen? Yeah.
Did it happen? It is like that though. Like you could go out one night and have a few drinks with friends at, you know, a pub or a club or whatever. But if you don't document that on Instagram or on Snapchat, people are like, well, you didn't go, you're lying. You stayed at home.
That's right.
But it is the world we live in.
Different world. Yeah.
It's scary.
I'm just going to tell you right now that I'm very glad. I'm very glad that Instagram and texting and Snapchat and all of that crap did not exist when I was in college.
See,
texting just started to happen when I graduated college. Thank God. That's all
See,
I got to say.
You must feel sorry for me because we were the generation that started it. We were the generation that brought it. I feel scared for my 10-year-old brother right now because he's growing up in
a scary world.
He's going into his teenage years, and listen, my 10-year-old brother has a phone.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So does everyone that age. I didn't have a phone at 10, but...
No.
My brother... actually, I'm lying. My brother's 9, I should say. He's not 10 until later in the year.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, wow. He's 9 and he has an iPhone better than me. So... And he knows what he's doing. Like, he knows how to... Like, he just... Everything's at his fingertips at 9 years old. And
that's it's a different world, generation.
The world he lives in. And it does kind of... my older brother used to say to me, oh, my God, you have Instagram and Snapchat going into high school. He didn't have that. And he's even saying... And I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. I was like, whatever. This is just what I'm doing. Now I look back and I'm like, oh, shivers. Like, my little brother has this. And if I said that to him now, he'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't...
Exactly. It's hard to see when you're in it. But when you remove yourself from it, it's...
And you probably look at me and you're like, oh, my God, Snapchat and all this when you were 16, 17 is, like, not a good idea.
I know, right?
But, hey, that's just the world we live in.
That's all right.
Queen, I want to thank you for telling your story in the theater world and speaking on equality a little bit there at the end and just the world we live in. Of course, before we completely wrap this up, where can people find you? Now we talk about social media. Where can people find out what you're doing? Because people need to know.
Well, they just do, don't they? Well, thank you so much for having me. What a lovely chat. And I'm sure we'll talk theater so much more. I'm so glad we have another thing in common that we can share.
Yeah.
But everybody can find me on Twitter at the Queen of NE and on Instagram at X the Queen of NE. And I really hope you listen to Queen's Court every Wednesday on Brainbuster Radio.
Yeah, you better. Because this is, this is the pro wrestling. It is a pro wrestling podcast, essentially.
Yeah.
It's just not about wrestling. So wrestling fans listening to this, wanting to know more about Queen, obviously you should be listening to Queen's Court every single Wednesday on Brainbuster Radio because it's fantastic. Especially, I can't get over the fact that, essentially, you're pretty much brand new at having your own podcast. So in the short time that we've been doing this, you're absolutely crushing it. So I think that's the general consensus from everybody is that you're just killing it. And I'm jealous and I'm now shutting down my show.
I encourage everyone to go and listen
to everybody on Brainbuster Radio as well as this show, as well as Wrestling Reverb, of course, because, hey, I'm going to put myself over as well. And Queen, of course, I invite you whenever you want to talk about anything non-pro wrestling, please hit me up and I'm sure we'll have many more chats on Reverb and on Diving In because there's probably about 400 topics that we could really, no pun intended, dive into on this show.
Yeah. Because, without a doubt.
There's so many more loves. There's so many more things we're passionate about. There's so many more things that we have opinions on that I think people would be interested in hearing. Because we've had chats, of course, off record and
we have
man they could make for some interesting topics
couldn't they though
I know oh my lordy but thank you everyone for listening to this week's Diving In. At this point I'm actually recording all of these shows that you've now heard before my debut has even happened, which is bizarre to me because I had people message me and being so open to come on this show when they haven't even heard it. So I guess in what future me would say is thank you everyone that has listened to the first few episodes of Diving In. Thank you for the lovely feedback. I hope you continue to do so. And I guess future me would also say that we have lots of stuff coming up for Diving In the future. A lot of things that even Queen doesn't know about that I have lined up. Because I think there's some things that... people aren't expecting me to talk about that I'm going to talk about. Even stuff that I don't really know what I'm talking about in. So, I'll leave you on that.
Okay, Joshy, okay.
I'll leave you on that. I'll leave everyone on that. I guess that cliffhanger, if we were talking in the theater world. And please, yeah, continue to listen to this show. And I'll catch you guys next time on Diving In with Josh. Peace out.